is the Todd and Friends podcast.
I don't like to waffle on predictions. That doesn't mean I always hope I'm right.
Oh, what's he going to do? Oh, come on.
I'm with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Todd, I knew we'd agree on something here.
From the KWLM Sports Studio.
Let's check in with Alan Horton here on the Todd and Friends podcast on these Tuesdays as Alan is into his prep work. Maybe already it is against the Phoenix Suns coming up on Saturday. Just called their game Sunday, Alan. Thanks, as always, for joining us for the show today. And, well, it's the Phoenix Suns. The Wolves wind up with a 3 seed. They finish off a terrific regular season with a little bit of a disappointing loss to Phoenix. And they wind up at the 3 seed. They were likely only the 2 higher than that anyway, even if they had won on Sunday, because Oklahoma City had the tiebreaker if all 3 tied, I think. Anyway, tell us about the regular season first before we get to the matchup with the Suns.
Yeah, I think when you look back at the entire 23-24 season, it was a it was really a remarkable turnaround from the year before when you're basically a 500 team. They were 42-40, and to add 14 wins and be dominant defensively with the number one defense in the NBA, holding opponents to the lower scoring in the NBA, holding opponents to the lower shooting in the NBA. There were a lot of positives in how, the front office, Chris Finch and his staff really brought this team together. The players responded, and they, you know, for the first time in a long time, Todd, they backed up what they said. You know, you always want to come out and play to a high level every single night and give yourself a chance to win. And, you know, teams strive to do that. Those are the elite of the elite, to come out and can play at that high level every single night. The Wolves did that. They backed it up this year. And oftentimes they maybe weren't the most talented team on the floor, but because they played so hard, they brought it defensively. They came out with 56 wins out of 82 games. That's the second best mark in franchise history. So I think there's a lot to kind of look at those 82 games and be proud of.
Yeah, no doubt. And the best record against the Western Conference of those teams also in the West, 37. You know, and this, I mean, I hear people saying that this might be the deepest the Western Conference has ever been, despite the fact been some great years for the West.
Yeah, I mean, they're 550 win teams. I think even the 9-10 teams, Sacramento and Golden State, are 10 games or more over 500. Mm-hmm. I think that speaks volumes about how every year you go into and everybody says, "Oh, the West is a gauntlet." That's just stating the obvious. I mean,
yeah.
The sun is blue. The sun is blue. The sky is blue. The sun is yellow. It's always going to be a fight. You just don't know how it's going to play out. And I don't think anybody could have foreseen, Memphis going from the 2 seed to, to the 14 seed with all their issues this year. But what one thing that has popped out to me, Todd, is that over the years there's always been kind of a team that makes that jump. It was Phoenix a few years ago that all of a sudden was a top 3 team. Sacramento last year. Memphis a few years ago just jumped into the top 3. And it just shows you can, if you come out and play consistently, too often I think we compare one team versus another. But in the 82-game regular season, you're only playing that team 3 or 4 times. I mean, maybe this year with the play-in, some teams matched up 5 times. But that's a very small percentage. And while one team might be better than the other, Golden State's got a ton of talent, right? But they haven't played consistently at all this year. And so, if you say this team's better than that team, well, they have to go prove it for 82 games. And like I said, you only play that particular opponent 3 or 4 times. And if you can steal a couple here and there and you split here, they split with the Thunder, the Wolves did. They split with the Nuggets. But they beat the teams they were supposed to beat. And they did a much better job this year of beating those sub-500 teams, where last year they struggled. And it cost them about 4 spots in the standings. Had they just taken care of business and won at their normal clip against some of those bottom feeders, not losing to Detroit twice and not losing to Orlando once last year and Charlotte and a bunch of the other dregs in the NBA, they didn't do that this year. They had a couple of slip ups, but everybody's got some of those. Those are more common around the league. So this was a great example of making some adjustments from last year and taking care of business and putting yourself in a much better position where now you're opening up the postseason at home for the first time since 2004.
Yeah, against the Phoenix Suns team. We'll talk about that here in just a minute, but I want to ask you about the opening round of the play-ins tonight. I was hoping the Lakers and Golden State would get matched up against each other. That could still happen, but it won't have the same thing at stake. I was hoping that would be the 9-10. How interesting that would be. As it is with Golden State in that 9-10 with Sacramento, backs up against the wall.
Yeah, I mean, this is why you want to avoid those games, because you get into a winner moves on, a loser goes home.
Yep.
Simple as that. At least for that 9-10 matchup. 7-8, you if you win, you jump into the playoffs, and if you're the loser of that, you still get one more shot at it. I mean, the play-in's just been unbelievable. It's been a bigger success. When I had Adam Silver on the broadcast, not this year but last year,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he was already crowing about how the play-in was, it had done more than they ever expected it would. It's given so much to the end of the regular season, whether it's the teams battling in the play-in or the teams in the top six that don't want to fall into the seventh spot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so many years you could look at the 3, 4, 5, 6 teams, maybe even 7 teams, and they're just kind of coasting the final month, two
yep.
months. It didn't make for competitive, intriguing basketball. And now you've got teams competing right through the end of the regular season. I mean, it came down, you only had one matchup set in each conference going into the final day. That was just, that's tremendous. And then when there's things on the line, that makes the games more important. It gives a greater intensity to it. The fans realize it. The players realize it. It just makes for a fun and better product.
If Golden State gets bounced tonight, is that kind of the end of the Golden State run as one of the top contenders in the NBA?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you can never say never with them, because mm-hmm. they did put it all together 2 years ago and kind of out of nowhere just sort of got to that title. They could do it again. They'd have to tweak some things, though. There's no doubt. The Draymond thing, I don't know where you go from that. This is year one of his contract extension,
yes.
I think. He's got 3 more years left. I think Clay's a free agent. That'll be a really interesting decision for them. But clearly they have not been able to do what they hope to do in terms of, they did have some high draft picks there. Remember, they had Jonathan Kuminga, they had
yep.
James Wiseman. They have some other picks that just quite haven't infused the level of talent to then pair with the Curry, the Green, some of the other guys they've had, the stalwarts, so they could kind of cover two eras, you know, and not just grow old with the Clay and Steph mm-hmm. and Draymond Green trio. And Andrew Wiggins is, you know, a lot of the things that are being said about Andrew Wiggins at Golden State were the same things that were being said here in Minnesota over the last 2 years. It's been disappointing. I realize Andrew's gone through some personal stuff off the floor. It's taken him away from the game, but his product on the floor has left Warriors fans wanting a little more.
Yeah, he had the chip on his shoulder. That chip was put there when he got traded to Golden State, and it helped that he no longer had to be, he wasn't the number one overall pick that should be saving the franchise.
No doubt.
That probably helped him too, but that didn't last his whole time in Golden State, did it?
No, I mean, he thrived because he was not now the third, fourth, fifth option
yeah.
on certain nights, and that was exactly where he needed to be. It wasn't his choice to get drafted number one, so
yeah.
That's a little unfair for everybody to expect him to be a number one. And unfortunately, that's what the Wolves needed. They needed a number one to pair with Towns, or at least a number two. And he was not that guy. It just was not working out. It was 6-plus years here. And both guys, you know, got opportunities, had high usage rates, and Andrew just could not. It's amazing that they gave, you know, that's one of the things I keep pointing out when we play Andrew Wiggins, is that, you know, the usage rate of Towns and Wiggins when they were here together for so long in Minnesota was the exact same. And yet here you had Towns, who was uber efficient. He was the third best in true shooting percentage during that span. And yet Wiggins was toward the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can't function a team when your two best players are that far. One's being so efficient, the other's being inefficient. And just, it just didn't work out. And unfortunately it took a little while, because you had to get through the D'Lo. You know, D'Lo was traded for Andrew Wiggins.
Yep.
Then you had to get through him to get to Mike Conley. And then you had to, of course, draft Anthony Edwards. And you're in a completely different situation. But it took a little while, but they finally got to the point guard and the key guy they needed, which was Mike Conley, in my opinion.
Yeah. Who do you think comes out of the play-in?
I don't even Golden State and Sac. Sac's at home, I guess. I guess I would still take Golden State. I feel like Golden State's got their number. I feel like New Orleans, I'll take the Lakers in that game. When they got AD and they got LeBron, I think
yep.
they just have a confidence level. They know they went to the Western Conference Finals last year. They just know they need to be healthy, and I think LeBron and AD both played. Brandon Ingram is kind of like in a Carl Anthony Towns situation, just coming back from injury, working his way back in. That's never easy. I think the Lakers win that one, and then I'll take New Orleans over Sacramento. So I think New Orleans probably gets the 8th seed. And the Lakers will take the 7th seed. That's
yeah.
my guess.
Yeah, interesting. All right, Wolves 3, Suns 6, Suns 3-0 against the Wolves during the regular season. Does that have any bearing on the playoffs?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It's it was as dominant. It's not a great matchup. There's no doubt about it. I think Chris Finch would admit that. And it was as ugly as against any team this year. I mean, 0-3, the Timberwolves beat every team in the league except for the Chicago Bulls and the Phoenix Suns. Mm-hmm. And the Bulls, kind of an outlier. You see them twice, and they played really well against us. But Phoenix is a real problem, and it's a problem because they match up extremely well. It doesn't look, at least in the three games, like the Timberwolves' two-big system, which has worked really well against almost everybody, has not worked really well against Phoenix. And this Phoenix team is not, you know, they've kind of flown under the radar a little bit, Todd, because they started the year 14-50. They were under 500 right after Christmas, and everybody's thinking, oh, that didn't work. Beal's always hurt. Their big three played two games together up until Christmas. After that, they've been healthy, and they've taken off, and they have the fourth-best record in the NBA. They're a top-10 offense, and they're a top-10 defense. They're really good. And in the three matchups against the Timberwolves, you know, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant have been the best three players on the floor, and that's not a good situation when you're trying to win a game or win a series if they have the three best players on the floor. So the Wolves, you know, had their struggle. They've fallen behind by double digits in the first quarter in all three games. They haven't led in the second half. They haven't even been within 10 points in all three second halves. It's been really dominant performances by Phoenix. But with all that being said, I think this is one of the strengths of Chris Finch and his coaching staff, is looking at a situation and acknowledging it, looking at it, studying it, going over it, pointing out everything you need to point out to your players, and then moving on from it and trying to adjust. So I know that the Timberwolves this week will have tremendous film sessions, practice sessions, and strategy sessions in how to fix some of the things that have gone wrong in the first three games. And that's what I'm really intrigued about for game one. See what the Timberwolves, what kind of adjustments they make, and how they can, I think, first of all, you know, have a good start to a game and be in a game. I mean, Phoenix has led for the majority of these three games. It's just been really, really dominant.
Yeah, and it's been different styles of games, too. I mean, I think the first one this year, the Suns were in the 130s for their win, and then there was a 97-87 game, and then Sunday was just, you know, Phoenix in front from the beginning.
Yeah, they've won games every which way you can, and they've looked confident. They've played well together. You know, they have played with a confidence that really, that might even be more troubling than some of the numbers that have been put up. It's just the confidence they've been playing with. They played with a swagger. They're sharing the basketball. There seem to be no issues whatsoever between Durant and Beal, Booker. They're all sharing it. They're all knowing when to go for their shots. Nurkic has been incredible with those. And then the guy really has been hurting the Wolves is Grayson Allen, because you're so focused on those big three. There's Grayson Allen, who's the number one three-point shooter in the NBA. And not only is he knocking down threes, but he's also getting the free throw line. He's driving. He's a scorer. He's not just a spot up shooter, and so that makes the Suns really, really dangerous when they're playing like that. It's not just a Wolves problem that they're going to have trying to slow them out. I think it's an NBA problem. Whoever the Suns face, it's going to be really difficult to slow this team down.
I don't honestly know. Do the Wolves play much zone defense when they're playing D?
You know, they have not played a lot of zone defense recently. They did. Earlier on in the season, they used it pretty frequently. I think the last time I looked it up, it was, you know, they were in the top 10 in frequency about halfway through the year, but I don't think they used it a lot down the stretch. And I don't know, you know, that's always tough to do, especially the Phoenix is not a high volume 3-point shooting team, but they're an elite 3-point shooting team. So they don't take a lot, but when they do have opportunities, they knock them down because they've got Grayson Allen, because Bradley Beal and Booker and Durant are all 40% 3-point shooters. Oh, yeah, and then they've got Eric Gordon and Royce O'Neal coming off the bench, who since Christmas are both shooting like 39% from beyond the arc. So you have to be careful with the zone, because if that leads to a couple of open threes, boy, that can be a big difference maker if it's a tight game.
So it sounds like mainly man. Where's the matchups that the Suns have exploited against the Timberwolves? Why have they dominated the three games this year?
Well, the Wolves, they've usually put Karl Anthony Towns on Grayson Allen. That leaves Mike Conley on Bradley Beal. And, you know, they've they've just done a really good job of running their offense, and sometimes that involves putting Cat in the pick and roll. Other times that tries to take advantage of Beal against Conley. You know, as I watched that first half back, it just, you know, when a team's playing well, and Phoenix switches a lot too defensively. I mean, they've been really good defensively and offensively. That's the problem. It's been both ends of the floor where they've just been really locked in and really good, and they just trust their offense and that's where ball movement comes in against a good defense. If you, even the Wolves with the number one defense, if you make them work, if you go side to side, if you drive and kick, you know, one pass and drive might get you a half step advantage on a defender. And then you do that again, that's now a full step. And you eventually get to a point where someone gets an open look. And that's what they've been able to knock down. And the Wolves, they have to take that recipe at the offensive floor, the offensive end of the floor, because they're really ganging up on Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. So he's had his lowest scoring average and lowest shooting percentage against any opponent has been Phoenix this year. He's averaging about 14 points a game and a shooting percentage right around 30%.
Wow.
So it's really been a struggle to get Ant going. And when Ant's not going, that really hasn't left anybody else. Carl's not really at the point coming back from the knee injury that he can kind of carry the offense. I think he's shooting in two games, as you might expect, a little bit rusty, some turnovers in there. And so that's really kind of bogged down the offense. And when you even have a couple of bad possessions, like the Wolves have had in that first half, they had 19 turnovers on Sunday. Just unbelievable. And Phoenix does not turn you over a lot. So I think that speaks to how hard the Wolves are trying to make something happen. And that pressure kind of, you know, it forces you to try to create something to happen that might not be there, deflections, turnovers, and it just kind of builds on itself. And when you have a couple of bad possessions against Phoenix, with them scoring so efficiently at the other end, I mean, they scored on like 80% of their possessions in the first half. Mm. That really puts pressure on you at the offensive end to try to match that. And guess what? They're a really good defensive team, and they have the better statistics against the Wolves' offense, and so that's a losing proposition. So it's going to be a lot to figure out here over the course of the 7-game series.
Earlier in the season when the Wolves were having these turnover issues, it felt at times like they were a little careless with the ball, somewhat lackadaisical. I thought they fixed that, but then 24 turnovers on Sunday, it didn't seem like there was as much carelessness, just a lack of concentration at times. What happened? 24 turnovers.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot. I think some of them were because of the Phoenix defense, but I think a lot of them were self-inflicted. I think the coaching staff would point to probably half of those just being on the Wolves themselves. And, you know, unfortunately, offensive fouls go down as a turnover two. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Cat had three of them. There were two more. I think there were at least five or six offensive fouls. So that's, you know, that's a guy being aggressive and, you know, it's not necessarily throwing it away, but that's probably where half a dozen turnovers came from is the offensive fouls. But the Wolves, they did. They had a real turnover problem early. And then I think heading into Sunday, they were ninth best in turnover rate since early March. So over the last month or so, they've been really good. And then this game happened. And actually, the last game against Phoenix too, they had a high number of turnovers. So it's you know, it's something that's always there. And it just if I guess with any part of the game, you think you've got this part of the game handled and you've got it under wraps. All of a sudden, you lose focus for a minute. And all of a sudden, those turnovers, especially in tight games, when those turnovers happen, you think you have momentum for a second. All of a sudden, that leads to a bucket at the other end. Then the offense gets a little timid. You miss a couple of shots. They score a couple of more trips down the floor. And all of a sudden, when you had momentum, all of a sudden that turns into an 8-2, you know, Phoenix run. And in a tight game, those runs make differences. That was the case against Denver in that matchup last week. That was the case against that Atlanta game at home, where some really untimely turnovers led to momentum and runs for the opponents. Those are the type of things that are huge in a postseason series.
Alan, thanks so much. We'll be tuned in starting on Saturday.
All right, Todd, appreciate it.
Alan Horton, voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves on the Todd and Friends podcast here on Tuesday. Join us again tomorrow.
Watch for future episodes of the Todd and Friends podcast at KWLM.com or on the air here at KWLM 1340 AM and 96.3 FM.